This week's episode of Nightmare on Film Street is brought to you by Baphomet & Co., small batch soap inspired by horror and the macabre. This week's pick is the Sunken Place Bar, a deceptively delicate soap that is light and warm with a bottomless calming, inspired by Jordan Peele's Get Out. Memories of a hypnotizing gaze, a warm smile with a hint of foreboding, and an endlessly twirling spoon. Get 10% off your order with the code NIGHTMARE at BaphometAndCo.com. That's 10% off with the coupon code NIGHTMARE at Baphomet & Co. Made by hands sometimes severed.
Fellow fiends, welcome to another terrifying and delectable episode of Nightmare on Film Street, the horror podcast with zero credibility, but all of the blood, ghouls, and gore your puny heart can handle. Let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome to another episode of Nightmare on Film Street. I'm John.
I'm Kim.
And this week we are talking, this week's episode, oh dear, we have some movies for you. We are continuing our month-long salute to domestic horror, because home is where the horror is this month at NOFSpodcast.com, and here on the Nightmare Film Street podcast, we will be talking Karen Kusama's The Invitation from 2015, and of course, the real deer here, Jordan Peele's Get Out from 2017. Little film, you might have heard of it.
Yeah, and how fitting, because I think it's
next week.
It's not.
Yeah, we know nothing about American Thanksgiving.
I thought it was
I thought it was this week too.
There are so many Black Friday deals.
Maybe I'm wrong. Isn't it? It's next week, I think.
I feel like it's got to be this week.
I think it's next week.
I'm going to look it up.
Live on the podcast.
Because, no, it's got to be this week. There are so many Black Friday.
Ask Siri. I want like live reporting.
How do I do that? I think I have Siri turned off.
I don't know how it works on your phone, but I can do it on mine.
I'm just.
When is American Thanksgiving?
Thanksgiving is on Thursday, November 28th, 2019.
Okay, so next week?
Next week.
All right. Well, I was wrong. Fuck. Black Friday starts earlier and earlier every year.
Does it?
That is the real nightmare.
I guess that's true.
It used to be only on the Friday after Thanksgiving. And this is even something we never used to have Black Friday. Canadian Black Friday used to be Boxing Day.
Oh, is that what's bothering you?
And now we fucking have both. We don't... Like, Black Friday, in a sense, is smarter because it's before Christmas. It's a way for you to stock up on your gifts, get good deals, blah, blah, blah. Boxing Day is just like, you just got a bunch of stuff and it's just like, why do I need this stuff? But it makes sense for stores because they're purging their post-Christmas inventory. I get that. Now, though, Black Friday starts on Thanksgiving, which we're taking people away from their families to work shitty retail and sell TVs that are specifically designed for Black Friday, and they are like a lesser model. I'm sorry, I'm getting very like, the man, consumerism.
I like that you've done your research. I don't know what's for sale on Black Friday.
It's always TVs, John. But what Thanksgiving is really about.
Yeah.
It's eating food with your family.
Okay.
And friends.
Yeah.
And your girlfriend's family.
All right, well, either way, before we get into it, and really, just to kind of put a halt on the Black Friday talk, Kim, what's keeping you creepy this week?
Well, we've had a few anniversaries this week.
Yeah, it's been busy.
So I've been making little videos and stuff for social media, but It, 1990, had its anniversary, first premiered on television, which is fun. Also, Salem's Lot, the Tobe Hooper Salem's Lot, turned 40. It was released this past week in 1979.
That's crazy. And if you just saw Dr. Sleep and you still got Stephen King on the brain, we got a, I can't say great episode. That seems a little heavy-handed.
It's an amazing, wonderful, pristine Stephen King episode.
I may be biased, but I think it's the best thing we've ever recorded. Stop listening to this one. I don't need the download numbers. Go back. Check out Salem's Lot and it.
Is it a good episode? Do you remember it?
I remember it. I remember liking those movies.
Oh.
I remember doing nothing but complaining.
About the bike ride?
About the fucking bike. No, I remember complaining about the majority of it and then still giving it a very good rating, which you did not appreciate.
That sounds like me.
Oh, but the end of that movie. Oh, man.
It's also Tim Burton's Sleepy Hollow turned 20 as well this week. It was released in 1999 and arguably the last great thing Tim Burton has made. Come fight me. I will fight you.
Frankenweenie's all right.
I guess, great.
Yeah, that's true. I really just proved your point. Like, yeah, Sweeney Todd, good. Frankenweenie, good. Not bad.
But I'm talking great.
Have we seen Dumbo, though? Can we really, really stand here and say that Dumbo's not a good movie if we haven't seen it?
Do we need to see it?
We don't. That said, it's got Colin Farrell, so look forward to Kim's thoughts on that movie next week.
When she watches it on mute.
Yeah, she's... Like, is there a Snapchat filter I can put over top of this movie that just, like, puts stars in his eyes, or maybe mine, when every time I look at him?
Less elephant.
Yeah. More cool bandanas on Colin Farrell.
He wears a bandana?
Yeah, he wears a bandana like...
Oh, right, like, the ascot, like an ascot thing. And You're like, I'm gonna start doing this.
I did not say that. I did not say that.
You're lying.
Not in public, I did not say that. I think it's a good look. I don't know that it's made for people with beards, but I do own a lot of denim shirts.
The jig is up.
I comb my hair almost the same way. I mean,
you get your style inspiration from Dumbo.
Not even Dumbo promo photos is what it was.
Oh boy.
Ugh.
Also keeping us creepy this week, we are catching up and celebrating our Patreon supporters. Yesterday was Thank You Patreon Day, so we wanted to do a quick moment to shout out our patrons and thank them so much for their support. Nightmare on Film Street would not exist without them. And December, something that we always do, is we like to do a little Christmas card. We call it our Krampus card, and we send those out to all of our patrons, our current patrons.
It's just a very, very small thank you from us to you at this time of year, because, like, we super duper appreciate you being here, but also every other day of the year that you're around. For anybody that's been with us for a week to a year, there are some people that have been with us since we started the podcast, yeah, which is absolutely insane.
It's kind of nutters.
So much.
Yeah.
We really could not do any of this without you. We truly mean that. Every dollar that we get from Patreon goes directly back into the podcast to make better quality episodes and to provide you with the best content that we can put out week after week. I hope you like it. And I really, truly cannot say thank you enough for everything that you've done.
Yeah, so the Patreon Krampus cards, we do have to make a cutoff on those just so that they get out in time for Christmas. If you are an active patron as of December 12th, you're going to get a Krampus card. You just need to make sure that your address is updated and good in Patreon. So if you've been a patron for a while, just check your profile, make sure your address is right. If you're just joining Patreon, thank you. We are so happy to have you. You're totally going to get a card. Just make sure that when you sign up, you add your mailing address so that we can send you the card. And if you want to join Patreon or check Patreon out, it is patreon.com/nightmareonfilmstreet.
Speaking of Patreon, I want to give a quick shout out to, a very overdue shout out to John, Michael, Vince, Andrew, Christy, Max, Charlie, Aaron, Devin, JC, and Eric. You are all cordially invited via this audio invitation to a fun night of catching up and bingo and cocaine tasting and all those normal things you do at parties you don't get killed at. You know what I'm talking about.
Expensive wine.
Oh yeah, bottles and bottles of it. Friends and friends you've never met before who could definitely overpower you in any sort of scenario that might be necessary.
And maybe tell stories where they murdered their wives.
Yeah, come for the cheese, stay for the macabre stories of why I just got out of prison and found sanctuary in this death cult. You know, those regular holiday favorites.
But enough Patreon chat, enough anniversary chat. It is time for dinner.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear.
Let's talk about Karen Kasama's The Invitation.
Each and every one of us is on a journey. And we feel that it's important to be on that journey with the people you love. You've been acting so suspicious of our hospitality.
This beautiful moment is upon us. Tonight is the night our faith is made real.
Something doesn't feel safe here.
From 2015, The Invitation is currently sitting at an 88% on Rotten Tomatoes, 6.6 out of 10 on IMDb, 3 out of 4 from RogerEbert.com, and 3.4 out of 5 on Letterboxd.
I would say this is one of those indie films that isn't necessarily underrated. It's been on Netflix. Was it a Netflix original or Netflix exclusive?
I don't think so.
It's been on Netflix for a while.
Yeah.
And I know that, especially after people saw You're Next, they were looking for something else like it.
Sure.
And I know a lot of people who've seen this movie and appreciate this movie. So, like, it's still an indie horror, but it's definitely got a good viewership. Does that make sense? Do you think a lot of people have seen this? I feel like...
Yeah, well, I don't think you need to be a big horror fan to appreciate this movie. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it has such an ending makes it easy to recommend. Like, you gotta check it out. I can't tell you anything, but the ending is incredible. And, it, like, even if you get the premise of the movie, like, oh, these people are coming to see their friends, they're in a weird cult. Oh, it's got a crazy ending. I'm gonna go ahead and guess the cult is gonna try and kill them. That's not the surprise ending. I shouldn't even say surprise, really. Which seems like a good point to say, if you haven't seen this movie and you know nothing about it, please take the time to go see it before I ruin it for you. Because I kind of
because
already have.
Because dead ending, though.
You're right.
And I think, too, most of this film lies with tension and unease. And I would definitely put it more in like the thriller suspense category for at least the first half of the film. So I think it's accessible to a lot of people, especially like Netflix moviegoers who are clicking on. And they're like, I want to watch something thrillery. I think The Invitation feels like a really wide variety of movie nights.
Sure. You know, it's funny that you say that. I love thinking about this as a Netflix template movie, because the Netflix template is, oh, we got to have something in the first 5 minutes. It's going to grab their attention and keep them in their seat. And like they like, oh, my God, I can't leave this movie moment in The Invitation is, oh, he killed a coyote with a tire iron. Like, I need to see how the rest of this plays out.
So, Invitation obviously starts off with an invitation.
Yeah.
Will and his new-ish girlfriend, Kira, get this really lavish, almost like a wedding invitation for dinner at his ex-wife's house. He and his ex-wife, we learn through kind of flashbacks and how delicately everybody is handling Will, had a unfortunate accident probably a couple years previous, where their son was killed.
Yeah, just like an accident at a party.
Yeah, and it took a toll on their marriage. The ex-wife, Edith.
Eden,
sorry. There's so many names, I'm sorry. It's going to be real stiff for a little minute. Eden tried to, we learn, commit suicide at some point, and they went to a grief counselor, and at some point the marriage fell apart. Whether or not her new husband/boyfriend had anything to do with it is kind of up in the air. But we know that grief is what separated Will and Eden.
Yeah, and they seem to be handling it both in two completely different ways.
Like, yeah, but Will still is trying to be adults, because obviously it's been a couple years. Nobody's hung out together, and they're doing this big dinner party with all the old friends. And it's like stiff but comfortable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because they're locking back into roles they used to have is kind of the idea.
Mm-hmm.
Can we just say for a minute, though, that The Invitation, in terms of a cult, great branding.
Like, oh, I know.
Like, the way that they talk about it, like, I was so lost until I accepted the invitation. Be like, boom, that's a sentence that sticks. Somebody thought this through.
Yeah, it's very, like, secret-y without necessarily being about ambition.
Yeah, well, I mean, think about The Secret even before it became so popular. Like, hey, I got the secret. Do you know the secret? Or I like, you know, something dumb like that. Like, obviously, like, you shouldn't.
Oh, I've been reading The Secret.
Yeah, I've been reading up on this secret thing. I can't think of another one right now. But yeah, accepting
wonderful.
The invitation.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah, that's good. But it is uncomfortable at a level that like only mumblecore movies have been able to achieve. You know, like Creep, and in anything where it's just like a
foreboding.
Foreboding characters that are estranged and like just the, oh, let's pretend to be normal things.
It's just, it scratches this weird kind of like, ooh, social norms are terrifying. Like,
yeah.
Where you're on the border of doing like the socially acceptable thing and being like, okay, no, this has gone too far. And it really plays, much like Get Out does, on the boundaries of like, okay, when is this fucked?
Yeah.
Because it's fucked all along.
It would be
fucked
even if they weren't.
911, you know what I mean?
No, but it would be fucked even if they weren't in a cult. Like, just that, oh, let's get together and have dinner again. Like, that whole thing would be awkward and weird and crazy. You could have almost the exact same movie. And I think it teases that that's the kind of movie that it's supposed to be. But to have the cult element thrown in there is just, I mean, I think we've all been in conversations with friends that are maybe trying to explain to you how they're getting their life on track, and you're just like, I can't get my life on track the same way you're doing it, but I feel good for you.
Or like, you haven't seen a friend in a really long time, and then you meet back up and they're like really into essential oils and they're like eating them,
like,
and they're avoiding their doctor because of them, and you're just like, oh, well, your house smells nice.
Yeah. I will send you encouragements from afar. And in 2019, afar means I'm stalking the fuck out of you on Facebook because like, I need a play-by-play of how this is going down.
I hope you're still getting vaccinated.
Oh, it's weird.
Oh, yeah.
You know, thinking about this movie, you were talking about the friends tiptoeing around Will and you know, treating him with, like, extra care because, mm-hmm. like, he seems to be, like, the damaged one still. Thinking about this movie from anybody else's perspective is Will comes into the room, talks to us for, like, 30 seconds, gets mad about something, and then, like, drifts off.
Because, and then just, like, sits on the stairs.
Yeah, I'm gonna go sit over here where it's also sad. Like,
I'm gonna go in the dead boy's room.
Yeah! He's on a greatest hits tour of, like, the worst moments of his life.
He, like, grew a beard in the two years that they weren't together, and then he was like, I'm Nirvana now.
Oh, it's so true.
Yeah.
It's so true. And I don't know. Maybe it's just that there is nowhere in that house. Like, maybe that's what they're trying to say, is nowhere in that house is comfortable for him.
Mm-hmm.
I also think he explains that it never felt like his house. His ex-wife came from money. It's her house. You know, it's nothing of the life he is leading now with his new girlfriend, Kira. And maybe just the fact that even if he goes to get a glass of water, he's reminded of the time he had to stop his wife from some slitting her wrists. If he goes out to the backyard, it's where he used to watch his son play.
And where his son maybe also died.
Yeah, so like there's nowhere he can go where there's any sort of room
solace,
for him to breathe.
Yeah,
yeah, there's no quantum of solace. don't ask me why that came to mind.
Oh boy. Yeah, and I think what really sets him off is like, I think he and Kira knew going into it that it was going to be difficult, but that it was something that they should do. It's been 2 years. Eden and David are making the effort, so they should too match it. And also, all of their old friends are there.
Sure.
And I'm sure that's something that they want, a connection that they want to retain.
Yeah.
Is all of those old friends.
If they don't go to that party, they are now her friends and not his.
Basically. That's just the law of friends. No, but
it's a political dinner.
I think what really sets him off initially, and what makes what amplifies kind of his feelings of like loss and anger are because Eden is wearing this veil of happiness.
Yeah.
And she's so soft spoken and she's so like, everything is fine. And then as soon as they start to bring out this cult stuff, it's almost like she's put all of her sadness in a little box and just ditched it to the curb.
Yeah. And he recognizes that.
For him, like, he carries all of the weight and grief, and she was the only other person in the world that they could relate to that.
Yeah.
Like, they had this really weird, and like, their hello was very tender when he first came in, and and you could see that there was like a lot of love, and that like in another world they would still be together and they would still be happy and still be in love. And there was something respectful too. Like, Kira's in the background of that scene, but she's not jealous. There's no animosity
No.
It's, there's such a, they're in such a weird circumstance, and there's so much understanding and pain around it that like everybody's just trying to get by. And Will and Eden share something so unique and traumatizing and dark. But the fact that she is in this weird state where she's just like pretending it doesn't affect her.
Yeah.
It's making Will feel like the whole burden is on him. Like, somebody has to remember the pain of him dying.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Which is, it's a good dynamic, and
but poor Will.
That's what gives him the ability, though, to be the character who can keep an eye on everything. If it wasn't for that dynamic between the two of them, he would not be looking at everything with such suspicious eyes. You know, he wouldn't be freaking out when he sees David lock the doors. He wouldn't be constantly asking about where a missing friend of theirs is, who supposedly showed up early to the party. But because he's already squinting at their cult choices, it gives him the ability to at least step out of the party a little bit and observe things.
Yeah, because from everybody else's perspective, like, yeah, Eden, David, and friends are being a little strange, but Eden did go through a really big traumatic experience.
We didn't even bring up the fact that they have friends there.
We're
with
gonna
them.
Get to the friends. But the fact that they, that Eden went through such a traumatic experience and is trying to find, like, even the most extreme things to help, like, comfort her. Kind of at that point, you're like, well, if it's helping her, if it's making her happy, like, it's weird, but, like, all the best to her.
Yeah.
And that's how she needs, that's what she needs to live.
Exactly. Yeah. So, like, nobody's looking down on her for it. It's just not what they would choose. And by the sounds of it, too, the invitation is a relatively popular, or at least well-known.
Yeah, because
movement.
One of the guys' boss did it. Like, they,
yeah,
it's like something it's, that they're familiar with in
exactly.
the name kind of thing.
It's the new fad that's slowly sweeping the coast, you know.
Well, and it's an interesting cult, too, because they kind of offhand mention that everybody who gets involved with it is dealing with grief.
Well, I think that was the idea, is that it started as like a grief group and then expanded, and it is a cult based on grief. And people who are longing and looking for a place. Like, realistically, any cult is preying on those people anyway.
But this is specifically this preying
them
by name.
This is very specifically taking people going through traumatic grief and sucking them up.
I wonder who Sadie lost.
Yeah, I wonder if Sadie was just another person who murdered somebody. Because so Sadie and Pruitt are the two friends that Eden and David have invited to the party, who are outsiders to the group. Sadie is crazy.
She's this very...
She's nuts.
Yeah, like not wearing shoes, picked her
she
up.
She wasn't wearing pants! She wasn't wearing pants when everybody arrived. She was like, I better wait for my time to, you know, the right time to come and introduce myself to the group. Until then, though...
Vagina out.
Vagina out. I'm looking through the door. I'm smiling at anybody that makes eye contact with me. Oh, jeez. She targets Will for sure. I don't know.
Totally.
She's so strange.
I think
she was a murderer. I think that's what it comes down to. I think each of these people who is hosting a party is paired with people who are in the grief group, but they are grieving their own mistakes. Like, they killed somebody and it was
just in case things go wrong, there are people there that can take care of it, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, totally. And that's
what
Pruitt
does. That makes a lot of sense.
That is what Pruitt does. That is what he's there for. That guy...
You're turning to the end a little too quick, John.
No, I'm not. I'm turning to 40 minutes into this movie when somebody wants to leave and Pruitt's like, oh, no problem. I'll help you back out. definitely murdered that girl in the driveway.
Okay, maybe.
Okay, maybe.
Okay, yeah, he totally.
You think that? Yeah,
he
definitely.
He totally did. Okay.
This time watching this movie though, there was a moment where they were like, "Hey, where's Choi? Where's Choi? Wasn't he supposed to be here? Wasn't he supposed to be here like early? He said he was going to be early for once in his life." And I was like, "Oh shit, I forgot about Choi." And I looked at you and I was like, "Yeah, we'll save it for the podcast. Choi's definitely dead. Died before the party even started." I forgot that he shows up. I forgot that Choi shows up, and it's like one of the greatest turns in this movie. Because so much of this is about assuming Will is correct. Will is our main character. He's who we're following. So we're with him on this mission. We're here to prove that something's not right about this party.
And this cult just keeps getting weirder. Like, they start by showing a video.
Fuck, how do you start a party with this video?
Yeah, and it's just like, here's an introduction to my death cult. And
let's watch someone die.
And it is a death cult. Like, they learn it is a death cult. It's a tender, loving death cult, but it's still a death cult. And
you don't even let your friends get a buzz on before you show them that video?
Exactly. And then they're like, "Oh, we're so sorry we offended you with our creepy death cult video.
Yeah.
Let's play a game that we played with our death cult."
That'll really settle the mood. No big deal, guys.
And
no big deal.
Guess what? Surprise, guys. It's not just a death cult, but it's also a sex death cult.
Oh, yeah. Sex, drugs, and death. This is a rock and roll heavy metal cult.
And they're all wearing these, like, ethereal dresses and talking like hippies in the woods, but it's all sex, drugs, and death.
Like, realistically, up until the point where you murder all your friends, what part of this doesn't just sound like high school? Sex and drugs and death. Oh, boy.
Are you, like, a metal concert?
Or a metal concert, sure. Heavy metal concert or a high school reunion.
I don't think high school reunions have a lot of sex, drugs, and death.
They probably have
a lot of receding hairlines and
you're probably right.
Loosened belts.
I've never been to one. I'm just going off of Gross Point Blank where John Cusack does cocaine and murders somebody.
One person is a hitman.
Yeah, like every high school reunion. Would you leave this party when Pruitt shows up?
He gives me vibes.
That's what I'm saying.
And so the weirdest thing about Pruitt is when they first bring out the video, if you're watching Pruitt, he's like,
"Yes,
no.
David, not
and
now."
Initially,
or not yet, I think.
Initially,
is what he said, right?
I thought it was because the video was something that was planned for later in the night, but I don't think they're supposed to indoctrinate them in the cult at all.
Oh.
I think that this experience is for the people that are in the invitation so they get to bring their loved ones with them.
Yeah.
But I don't think the consent, obviously, or even the knowledge from them is key.
No, probably
not. Good David
point.
Showing the video, I think, is Pruitt being like, because if the vibe changes too early, then they are definitely going to have to lead to force. But then when they start playing this Never Have I Ever game or This Is What I Want to Tell You game, he full out goes into the story where he talks about how he murdered his wife.
Yeah.
And that's his grief, is that he got drunk and hit his wife so hard, she died instantly.
He is a big enough guy, you'd believe it. It brings the vibe down. I see what you're saying. So, like, if he's saying, "David, let's not do this," you would think, okay, the story Pruitt's going to tell is going to course correct everything, get us back on track. We're all having a good time. You know what everybody needs. Hey, I'm just testing the temperature of the room here. I think it's about time that I told you, me, the person you don't know, is a convicted murderer.
Like, and I went to prison, all that stuff. And
I paid that way. And that's all he had to say about it.
Yeah.
He's an odd duck. We don't get any story from Sadie, and I got to assume it's got to be something similar. Like, I think she was in a relationship.
Either that, or they literally just picked her up on the way to Mexico, and she's just joined along. Because she's just like, yeah, this cult seems real great.
I think so, because I think two other people show up asking to help. And David says no, because it would really tip the scales. There's a moment where the doorbell rings, and we don't see who it is. And it's when I think Claire is trying to talk to Will. That's where she's like, "Ask me any question," which is honestly the cutest thing that somebody who hasn't seen another person in like 5 years could say. Because she just wants to have a conversation with him. Like, just ask me anything about myself. Like, we haven't seen each other. Let's know each other again. Like, mm-hmm. I think that was really cute. It's good writing. But Will is way too focused on David, who's at the door, acting very nervous. But we never see who's there. And when he comes back, he says, like, oh, just two people looking for a party. And you're like, what? What?
Like, this is not the neighborhood where people just walk around like, hey, can I come in? Like,
no, not really. We're in the hills, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, do you think they are people who are in the invitation but don't have a house to go to?
Yeah, maybe.
Or they've already murdered a whole house, but for some reason haven't killed themselves and they want to do some more.
Maybe. I always just initially like thought maybe that it was just people of the cult who were checking in on houses that would be doing an invitation tonight.
Oh.
And we're just checking in to make sure everything auditors. Is like going kind of thing. Yeah.
Everything's cool.
He gets some phone calls and stuff too that also agitate him. So I assume that there are higher ups that are checking in on
making progress.
All of the individual and like just seeing where they are in the evening.
You're probably right. That's probably what it was, actually. Anyway, it's all...
Like, you guys, we noticed that you don't have your lantern out yet,
That's probably exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Damn. We gotta get to that lantern.
Yeah.
Before we get to that lantern, though, talk to me about flashbacks in this movie. How you like the quantity of flashbacks in this movie?
I don't mind them, but...
Having watched it twice in the last week, how do you feel about it?
I like that we get to see Will and Eden in love.
Sure.
Because it makes the scene where they first see each other have a lot of weight to it.
Okay.
Even retroactively, like when we see them in the tub and stuff, like they're very sweet together. And you can very much see that if this tragedy never occurred, they would have lived a very happy life.
I think so.
Also, Will without his beard, not good.
Which is funny because I don't think I've ever seen him with a beard in anything else. The actor.
Doesn't he have a beard in Upgrade?
He has a beard for like half a minute.
Oh.
Just to show that he's like given up on himself. And he's
been and I'm like, down. Ooh, attractive.
I think if we remove the flashbacks in this movie, we cut 20 minutes out. Maybe not 20 minutes. I'm over-exaggerating, but... They are needed. You're right. Like, it shows us a life that doesn't exist anymore. But at some point, I get it, and I don't need more of it.
Yeah. Unfortunately, this film is kind of a slow, tension-building film. So to enjoy it, you really have to just, like, immerse yourself in it. Like,
sure.
We did watch it twice this week because, unfortunately, like, our recording schedule kind of got pushed back. But... The first time I watched it, like, we were really into it, and I really, really watched it. And then the second time, we kind of just had it on to keep us, to update us a little bit, but we were also kind of working while we were watching it. And I didn't enjoy it as much, because you really need to invest your attention in this movie to get the reward of enjoying the ending. Does that make sense?
It makes sense.
So
it's funny that we're at a point in time where we could say, like, you really need to actually look at this movie to like it.
I hate that, but I would say that Netflix maybe isn't the ideal spot for this movie because it's definitely like a lights off.
It's a theater movie.
Yeah. Surround sound. You need to be in this movie as much as possible, even if it's not necessarily like a bang, boom, crazy audio, whatever type of movie, but just that the slowness needs to affect you.
Oh, yeah. I think this time around...
And the ebb and flow of, like, social graces.
Yeah. So this time around, the thing that impressed me the most, there were two scenes, and it was just how they looked. Like, I love how calculated this movie is, and I love how planned out it is, because it isn't like Fight Club. We don't get an ending where we, like, and you see, like, the party from the other perspective, where they're like, oh, they're putting pills in the punch, and, oh, here's Pruitt shooting Claire. You don't see any of that. You know it all happens. What impressed me the most this time was the scene at the pool with Sadie. I think it just looks gorgeous. It's, like, super dark. Everybody's basically silhouetted except against this very blue pool because the lights are there. And it's also just, like, a very weird scene where Sadie is, like, we're all going to be dead soon. I could get away with anything. You could get away with anything. Let's get away with something. It's just a good scene, and it's very eerie.
Also, it's the only kind of glimpse you get into her without being, like, cute and nice and in front of
people.
Yeah,
because she does look like she's like, I will scratch your fucking eyes out if we don't have sex right here, right now. That's scary.
Yeah.
Because, like, she has this frustration that he won't give into it. Like, everybody's having a good time, and, like, while they're not maybe ready to accept the invitation, they're all going with it, and she's very upset that he's just as... nervous and skeptical as when he first arrived.
Mm-hmm.
But also, the other scene that really impressed me the most is just like a small little bit of camera work. I think I called it to you when we first started watching it, and I like stopped everything I was doing when it came up the second time. It's where Will is watching Pruitt.
Yes,
yeah. Right? Where we see, we're with Will at the window watching Pruitt help Claire down the hill, and then he stops her and goes out of the way. And just when you know they are out of sight and something bad's about to happen, and this is where we should really be paying attention, David comes up behind him and
reflection in the glass.
Yes, we're watching that whole scene as a reflection. So like the camera just pans up a little bit. We're in the same window. We don't see Pruitt.
You cannot
and Claire
see
anymore.
Out the window anymore, but you're still looking through the window, but you're just seeing the reflection of David.
Yeah, and also just the fact that he doesn't turn around to have that conversation with him. They stare at each other through the window, and it's just like they're both very distorted looking at each other. It's just, it's the composition of that shot is amazing. And now I'm ready for ratings. That is the highlight for me. That's what I wanted to talk.
No, that was an amazing, amazing fucking moment.
Yeah, I really liked it. And I guess I should, my surprise when Choi showed up was very funny to me because I'd completely forgotten. It is a brilliant turn in this movie to have a character who we think has already been murdered show up, because it completely demolishes Will in front of the entire group. He's maybe slowly gaining some traction with them to explain how weird shit is and how maybe we all shouldn't just be getting drunk and having a good time. I think something dangerous is happening.
Mm-hmm. And he gets them a little bit on board, too. Where is Choi? And they're asking Eden and David, like, he should be there because Will gets a message that Choi is out.
You're like, literally like, okay, going up to the door right now. 3, 2, 1, bye. Like, the only thing it needed was him knocking on the door before the voicemail ended.
Mm-hmm.
But he fucking shows up because apparently he got a phone call from work and he got dragged away. Oh, one of those long stories. Which, I would love to watch this movie from Choi's perspective. Because he's about to go somewhere, he gets pulled away, goes to work, and then he comes back to the most hostile dinner party ever.
It's just very stiff and tense, and unfortunately, Will's gotta eat shit because he accuses them of basically everything that he thinks is going down. He says that he found the barbiturates in the drawer.
Yeah, he discloses that he's been hunting around the house rooting through things.
Yeah. And that they maybe murdered Choi.
Oh, man. It's, you know, that would have been Choi's opportunity to just take Gina and get out. Like, hey, let's just maybe leave.
The fact that Will and Kira don't leave in that moment is kind of crazy. But I think it's because he knows that if he leaves in this moment that all these friendships are ruined. So he needs to, like, let time. You have to sit in that uncomfortableness of that night and apologize to everybody.
Exactly. He has
to. And then
to
have a drink with them and then go.
And
you know
then
what I mean?
Go. Yeah, yeah. Thankfully, there's a whole bunch of rooms in that house for him to go sulk in. And I think he takes a turn in each of them. Because it gives us more flashbacks. It gives us more time. The flashbacks do get to me, and I don't need them. And it's just like, it's a way for us to get out of the party for a minute. But I suppose it's also a way for us to get into his mind. So he goes and sulks. We have a few flashbacks. And
stop shitting on the flashbacks!
I don't love him. I don't love him. But it doesn't hurt the movie that much. Anyway, he comes back just in time for dessert, where they are handing out some sort of wine with dessert. Let's call it ice wine.
It might be a dessert wine.
It might be a dessert wine, guys. I've never had one of those.
And they have these fancy little cups.
Yeah.
And nothing really happens in particular to set Will off. It's just...
No, that's not true. There is something.
No, but it's observing. And it's,
sure.
It's seeing. So there's a lot of, like, what do you want to
say? Well, in
that
time...
You're being really
before,
intense.
Before he comes back to the table, because Pruitt comes to get him, because it's time, basically, he finds David's laptop, where there's another video from the leader of their cult saying, I know it's not going to be easy. I know it's hard. I know we're asking a lot of you, but you have the strength. You can do this.
It's very vague,
I believe
though.
In you. I will see you soon. Like, it's, and he's got like tears in his eyes. And like, sure, it's vague, but the last video we saw, the only other like indication of this guy's character is that he sat around and breathed in a dying woman's breath.
Okay, fine. But
he was like, good year.
Yeah,
come
but
on.
This is after he accused them of the Choi thing, and Choi is fine and well. So it's still a little bit of a leap for him to be like, fuck, well, go yeah. drink these wines! Well, and yeah, he just can't. Like smacks everybody's wines out of their hand.
He can't kick the door open and come around, look what I found, motherfuckers! Like, no, he can't do that.
But it's because of how David and Eden are acting as they're pouring out the wine. And David says to Eden, he's just
well,
like,
they're proud.
Look at all these people that are here for you. Look at all these people that love yeah, you. Just, and you're just like, yeah. And they're pouring wine like it's the last fucking time they're ever going to have
right?
wine.
Exactly. You gotta just pretend it's old hat, you know? Like, if you really want to get away with it, it's got to be, like...
It feels very ceremonial and special
yeah.
and magical. And David ruins everything.
Oh, yeah.
By kung fu kicking wine out of everybody's hands, except for Gina? Is
yeah,
because
she takes a sip immediately. And it's good for her character. She seems like the person who's, like, going to dive headfirst into shit.
Yeah, and Sadie is pissed. She lunges at
oh,
Will.
Yeah. Well, yeah, she's like, you ruined it!
And then she hits her head off like a curio cabinet, and then, oh my god, panic, 911, we have to get an ambulance. They learn all the doors are locked. And while they're still kind of like, what the fuck did you do, Will? You killed Sadie. Gina is dying in the background with, like, foam at the mouth.
Hell yeah.
So
because
guess
that
who's
fucking
vindicated?
Wine. Yeah! Oh, poison. Oh, he was right this whole time. But there's no time for apologies.
Yeah, because they get a gun.
Can you imagine him trying to take an I told you so moment?
Like, okay, put the gun down. I told you so.
Okay, step one, guys, is what we gotta do. We gotta go find some weapons. We gotta go rescue our friend over there. But before, can I please get an I told you so? Can I please? Like, he just needs it in order to finish the rest of the fight.
Oh.
Oh, man.
And then it's really just a battle survival, because the cult people were in a death cult. Surprise, surprise, the death cult was a death cult.
It's in these moments, too, that I find it very interesting. Like, yeah, Pruitt is like a monster. He's a hulk of a man. He's kind of a killing machine. Sadie's the same way. She's just, like, chaotic. But David and Eden are handling this very differently. You know, David's just like...
shooting people.
Yeah, he's just like, okay, well, you know, easy way, didn't work, gotta roll up our sleeves, there's only one way to do this, it'll be over soon, no big deal. But, like, you do get a glimpse that, like, Eden can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, maybe there is definitely some doubt in her mind about what she's doing, because David seems to be the driving force behind the two of them.
Well, once the veil has been lifted on the cult, yeah, you see that she really is kind of a passenger in this, and she really is just trying to find something that will eat her grief.
Yeah. Unfortunately, they found the one group that also wants to eat their friends. Because they believe so desperately that there is a eternal life, a heaven, a
and
happy
like a
place.
Uniting of everybody.
Yeah.
In the end.
That what, you know what? We're talking about how great this place is. Why don't we just go there now? Like, realistically, what's stopping us? It's waiting for us. Why
and
would
it's like,
we...
oh, well, we'd miss all of our friends back here. It's like, let's bring them
good
with
point.
Us.
Yeah.
Let's
why...
bring everyone we love.
Why would we let them live such miserable lives when, like, everything could be peachy keen over here in the greener pastures? What am I saying? It doesn't make any sense. Okay, you know what? That's not true. It's logical sense in their mind.
If you've bought into the death cult, it's perfectly logical.
Yeah, if murder and suicide don't get you a ticket to the bad place, and no matter what, you're going to the good place, why not just go to the good place now? It's interesting that they don't think about their friends' relationships. Like, how happy are they going to be? Regardless of you wake up in a happy place. That one guy, Ben, sure, he's talking about how his marriage isn't good. They fight all the time. But they've got a kid, don't they? Did somebody mention that they have kids? Like, yeah, these people are in relationships outside of the group. They've got families. None of their families are coming with them.
Yeah, but we're looking at such a tiny portion of this cult, because at the end we learn that the invitation is... like, this is
wildly
popular.
This
is night one for, like, all of California.
Oh,
and
man.
The invitation is happening in a bunch of households. It might also only be phase one.
Mm.
So maybe not everybody in the invitation is going.
Damn.
You see what I mean?
Maybe. I think phase two would be harder than phase one. I think phase one, you want to just, like, sweep the nation.
Yeah.
I think worldwide domination.
I don't know. I don't have an answer.
It's true. What a good ending, though. That final image. Like, they're rescued. They're not even rescued. It's, you know, they're safe. All the bad guys are dead. They go outside just to get some fresh air. And we see an ominous red lantern that David had lit earlier that reveals hundreds of red lanterns across the California hills.
Helicopters and fire trucks. And
like, every available emergency service is out on the streets right now. And it is absolute chaos. What a good ending.
Yeah, it's pretty dark. Which, I almost want sequels of this movie that aren't connected at all.
You want to, okay.
Because I want to get a glimpse in other houses, but unfortunately it couldn't be the same movie because you can't, like, live through that tension again because we know the death cult's death cult.
I wouldn't say that they can't do it. 10 Cloverfield Lane was fucking incredible.
True.
If you could 10 Cloverfield Lane this movie, I want to see that.
Yeah.
It's called Open Invitation.
There's got to be a spot, though, like a gym where they're holding invitations for people who don't have, like, family and friends. Like, those people that were, like, knocking on the door. Like, an invitation room where it's like, okay, guys, does everybody have a paper cup of Kool-Aid? Are we all ready to go now? Okay.
Are we all ready to go now?
Wait, let's just do a little icebreaker first. So, like, shake hands with the person on your right. Tell them your favorite color and your favorite movie. Okay, now go to your left. All right, now your favorite pet and the street you grew up on. Okay, now, everybody. Cheers.
The funny part about the scenario is that if I'm there and they're like, what's your favorite movie? And I'd list a movie and they're like, I haven't seen that one. I'm like, oh, you're never going to be able to. Like, there's no time. They're not going to let you bring horror movies to the good place. They fucking better.
Oh, boy. Yeah, this movie is very good. Unfortunately, I think seeing it twice this week has kind of drained us out on a little bit, so I don't think we were as enthusiastic as I want us to be, because this movie is wonderful. My only faults with it, I would say, is that the acting of the friends, like the minor characters, is a little eh at the beginning. It's a little, like, not wonderful, but the dialogue is great.
Oh, yeah.
So, and then once stuff kind of starts to happen, people kind of fall in their roles a little bit, and everything kind of gets smooth sailing from there. But I just have a hard time with the friend who's there, the friend that's there solo, but isn't single.
Gina.
No, the guy.
Ben.
And Gina.
Ben and Gina.
Yeah, I'm just a little like, eh, on them. But then later on, it's fine. But everything else about this movie is fucking amazing. And I'm normally not one for slower movies, but this one is so well crafted and it's got such a good ebb and flow and keeps you going like, what the fuck, so much that that I'm so totally invested. And also, it's a cult film, which is like, it's not hard for me to enjoy anything with a cult in it.
Yeah, I love movies like this because it's not that it makes you ask yourself this question, but you can't help but ask yourself, when would I leave?
Yeah, like, when do I hit the button?
Yeah, like, I don't know, because it gets weirder and weirder and it pulls you in. And the more you know, the more you need to stay. And at some point, you're curious whether or not Will is, like, it sounds like Will could maybe make enough of a fuss to get out. But
there were opportunities where he probably could have.
At some point, he decides that maybe he should stay for the sake of the group, because if he's right and they all die, not that he knows what's going to happen, but if he's right that they're dangerous, then leaving is not the right decision, because he also doesn't have enough to call the cops. So he kind of like has this protector role that he's going into. Not entirely unsurprising.
But the movie's so great at bringing you to the point of, like, pushing the button and, like, this is fucked, we need to leave, we need to stop this. And then, like, as soon as you're there, Troy shows up. Like, as soon as you're there, something happens that's, like, normal.
Yeah.
And it brings you back, and you just, like, you cannot get out of there. But I think that's a good spot for us to move into our next film.
I think you're right.
So, before we talk about getting out, ratings on Invitation.
God, I love this movie a lot. I'm going to give this movie I'm not going to overthink it. I'm just going to give this movie a 3.5 out of 4.
I'm also going to give it a 3.5 out of 4.
Yeah, this movie rocks.
Yeah, it's a really great movie.
Just a perfect modern slow burn. Near perfect modern slow burn. I can't say perfect. Anyway.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Moving on, let's talk about Jordan Peele's Get Out.
You got your toothbrush?
Check.
Do you have your deodorant?
Check.
Do you have your cozy clothes?
Got that.
What?
Do they know I'm black?
Should they?
You might wanna, you know.
Mom and Dad, my black boyfriend will be coming up this weekend. I just don't want you to be shocked that he's a black man.
I ain't never seen you like this before, bro.
Meeting families. Taking road trips, don't come back all bougie, man.
Come back, get your damn pants up to your damn stomach.
So you guys coming up from the city?
Yeah, we're just heading up for the weekend.
Can I see your license, please?
He wasn't driving.
I didn't ask who was driving, I asked to see his ID.
Call me Dean and hug me, my man.
So how long has this been going on, this thing? We hired Georgina and Walter to help care for my parents. When they died, I couldn't bear to let them go.
Do you smoke in front of my daughter?
I'm gonna quit.
She'd take care of that for you.
How?
Hypnosis.
I'm good, actually.
Are you ready for this?
I'm back in B.
So look, I go do my research. Apparently, a whole bunch of brothers been missing in this suburb.
But it's cool.
Bro, how you not scared of this, man?
Couldn't see another brother around here.
Chris was just telling me how he felt much more comfortable with my being here. Get out.
Sorry, man.
Get out!
Yo! Rose, we gotta go.
Is everything okay?
Rose, the keys. Just get the keys.
I don't know where they are.
Rose!
Sink into the floor.
Wait.
Sink.
Mom, it's a terrible thing to waste. It's a terrible thing to waste.
If there's too many white people, I get nervous.
No. No.
A mom is a terrible thing to waste.
From 2017, Get Out is currently sitting at a 98% on Rotten Tomatoes, 7.7 out of 10 on IMDb, 3 out of 4 at RogerEbert.com, and 4.1 out of 5 on Letterboxd.
This is kind of a fun one because Get Out came out after we started Nightmare on Film Street.
That's true.
And we got the opportunity to actually review this movie as one of our early Drive Home from the Drive-In episodes. That'll be part of our archive. Unfortunately, they're no longer available on the podcatcher because we're going to be putting them on Patreon hosting fees. You know, the deal. All of our older episodes are gone, but we've technically already talked about this movie on the podcast. So we're in the kind of unique experience that maybe will come up more in the future.
I would think so. That I need to pair Mandy with something.
We're talking about movies that we got to talk about initially with you guys. So this is kind of our revisiting of Get Out.
Yeah.
And I don't even remember what my initial takeaways were, but hopefully I'm not a broken record talking about Get Out again.
I remember us being very surprised. Neither of us thought it was going to be as good as it is.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I remember having an interesting experience rewatching it at the end of the year for our top tens and liking it so much more then.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I think we were maybe just, like, a little, like, down the middle in our Drive Home from the Drive-In review, which is unfortunate because this movie is pretty damn good.
Yeah. I mean, so watching it now, because this is probably the fourth time I've seen it.
Something like that.
I'm definitely a lot more nitpicky than I was like second, third viewing.
Sure.
Because first viewing, I was like, oh, this is actually really good. And then second and third, I was like, this is amazing.
And now it's like, wow, this movie is the very low budget movie.
And now I'm picking at little things. So sure, I'm going to be a little bit more nitpicky now. But that's only because I'm very familiar with the movie.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to change your rating.
No. And, you know, it's not like this movie needs any help because...
No.
I don't know if
I don't know. Do you remember the ratings I just read? It does not need help.
I do not know if I've met a single horror fan or person who has not seen this movie and does not like it.
Yeah. It's pretty universally accepted as a great movie.
Even a good movie.
Even a good movie. Yeah. Maybe it's not your bag, but you can appreciate that it's really well put together. And that's the thing. Like, it's not just like, oh, what are we going to say... I'm already stopping myself halfway through sentences. What are we going to say that hasn't already been said and probably said better? This movie was a huge surprise when it came out. Obviously, like, oh, there's the Jordan Peele. Like, it sounds boring to talk about now, but when this movie came, it was like, oh, let's see if this funny guy can make something scary. And holy shit, did he. And it's proved, he has proved, holy shit, can he.
I love that, and this is something that we can talk about kind of retroactively because we're in a good place now to look back at it, and just how quickly horror got its clutches on Jordan Peele and has just folded him into our world.
What do you want? You want H.P. Lovecraft? You want Twilight Zone?
And you can really see, though, where these opportunities were plucked for him because watching Chris in the basement of the Armitages and the TV screen and the composition and the couch and that really retro rec room vibe, you're just like, I see the Twilight Zone here.
Oh, yeah.
I see it.
That movie, it's such a weird turn, like, at that moment, like, it shifts in a weird way.
And the Sunken Place is a bit sci-fi.
Fuck, and the Sunken Place
is, and the Twilight Zone is just like... sci-fi.
Well, yeah, there could just as easily be like an eyeball blinking somewhere in the distance and just
a
like
a door opening and closing.
A single pane of glass being broken.
A cymbal clanging.
Why do they have E equals MC squared? Why do they have that window?
Math.
Is it supposed to be a mirror? Like, it's just, oh, bad luck to break a glass. Is that what it's supposed to be? Or are we shattering
the reality?
At first
I thought you were talking about the Sunken Place. I was like, those are his eyes.
No, John, those are his eyeballs.
That's what he sees.
So here's the thing about this movie that I find so fucking impressive is that the Sunken Place is an incredible idea. The set that they have where he is being mentally prepped for surgery is brilliant and designed so geniusly. And the hypnotizing, the way everything fucking looks is genius. And you could put any character in it and it would look great. But
the fact that he's got this trauma.
Yes. Also, it's like his biggest strength. The fact that his trauma is his biggest strength is something we could talk about later if you want. But just, oh, God. Like, when I think about the whole thing, that we have to go back to him.
Vulnerable.
His mother isn't home. He's scared. He's watching TV. He's so anxious and scared. He can't get up. He can't move. And he's just scratching at the... The chairs of the arm. The arms of the chair. Shut up, don't. I could have edited this if you didn't laugh. No.
Carry on.
Like, we see the scratches in the posts, right? And so, like, for that to be something that he can lock back into, and they have to use that to get him to the sunken place, is so fucking brilliant, because it's how he gets out. It's how he's able to escape, just by, like, those movements that he's doing with his hands unconsciously shows him a way to get at the whole fucking movie.
Well, and in talking about that, is that's what's so wonderful about Get Out. And you hear it getting credit for, like, its approach to racism, but not the scope of the racism. There are so many different varieties of racism in this film.
Oh, yeah.
That it is insane how it nails every single one of them. There's, like, the modern day kind of white to black racism, where it's like the, like, oh, you guys are so fast and we love Obama, and like that kind of racism. But then there's also that almost like deeply ingrained racism, where the reason why they're taking advantage of these black people is, yes, they think that they're physically superior or whatever, or they just want to try, like, the new brand of cool.
Oh boy.
But that they aren't necessarily mentally, like, a mental match. And how Chris beats them, he beats them with jujitsu and not brute force.
Yeah, can right? we talk about that?
I wanted to get to it, and I was like, I have to explain my other stuff, because as soon as I say jujitsu, John's gonna go off, so.
Fuck, I feel like we're just, like, laying the thesis for, like, of a roadmap for the rest of this episode, because, like, another thing I want to talk about is how genius it is that he's a fucking photographer. Like, it's something that he can do when he feels super uncomfortable and be an outside observer.
And look through other window, like, another lens, and in your in the sunken place.
You're looking through that fucking lens.
Yeah.
And, like, the guy wants him because he's a photographer. Like, I want your fucking eyes, man. The movie is about the black experience, which the majority, like, every other character in the movie is white. They can never see the world through his eyes and as him. And that's something that they're trying to achieve, even though what's funny is that they will never.
They're being really racist by going about it.
Oh, it's the whole thing's fucked. The writing in this movie is just too fucking good. That's what it comes down to. Like, every aspect of this movie, it is such a tight script, and there is nothing wasted, and it all comes back, and it all pays off in just, like, the most brilliant ways. And originally, initially, when we meet Jeremy, Rose's brother, at the Armitage's place with Chris, he's had a few drinks, and he's letting loose, and you can tell that he is, that superiority is just slipping through a little bit. Where it's just like, oh,
he's just egomaniacal. Like,
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, like, oh, yeah, you know.
Caleb,
like,
Landry Jones was perfect casting.
Yeah.
Perfect.
He does a great job for the scumbag. Oh, yeah.
Nobody else could have played that scene.
Yeah,
like he does.
With your genetics and your makeup and your frame, you could be unfucking stoppable, man. And what he's basically trying to say there, to some degree, is like, oh, yeah, if we fought right now, you'd win. But that's only because you're genetically predisposed to win in a fight. But you see, the mental capacity, that's where the white man wins.
Basically, so that's like the really deep ingrained racism that, like, runs through this film. Like, it's kind of mainly talking about modern day racism and how, like, you're making it fucking awkward. Please stop making it fucking awkward for me. And it's really interesting too, because now that Jordan Peele is this huge superstar, I'm sure he has to deal with it so much more now.
Oh, definitely. I would think so, yeah.
But yeah, the fucking superior physical thing, like, it just rolls down your spine and tickles your little hairs, and you're just like, this is really evil.
Yeah. I think, like, one of the greatest things about this movie, though, is that, yes, they're just two white idiots talking about, like, maybe one of the most racially complex films of the last 20 fucking years, maybe. In modern cinema, at the very least. Obviously, the black experience is not something that I can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
But this movie frames it in such a way that it becomes relatable for anybody watching it.
This film does succeed in being for everyone.
That's the most genius part about
There's
it.
There's versions of racism that we can all recognize. Like, whether we grew up with, like, semi-racist parents, or we saw a semi-racist thing at the grocery store, or, like, maybe we have some natural racist tendencies. It's recognizable in this film.
Yeah. But also just that, when Chris finds anybody that he can relate to, they are on another planet. Like, just the uncomfortability that he has. Like, you can understand that he's uncomfortable around the family and, like, the whole group of people. But, like, when he goes off and he tries to talk to Georgina and Walter, they are aliens. Again, it's just so deeply unsettling.
And it comes across as they're very cold and they're very calculated because like you can tell that there's cogs turning with every word that they say. And to a layman who doesn't know what's fucking happening in that brain situation, it comes off like they're evil assholes.
It's so weird.
Except for that scene where...
Let's get to it.
Georgina confronts Chris about the phone.
It's the
single, like, if I could tentpole this movie with a scene, there's two scenes. You can tentpole
the last 10 years of horror with this scene, maybe.
There's two scenes that I think are absolutely phenomenal. Phenomenal snowman. There's two scenes that I think are phenomenal snowman.
Mm-hmm.
The scene with Georgina.
Oh, yeah.
Where she is conveying so many fucking things that how she did not get nominated for Best Supporting Actress, I do not know. Let's go down what her character is going through. Grandma, who, surprise, surprise, Georgina actually is. Georgina is whoever the body was before Georgina got in there.
Yeah.
Or Grandma, if her name's not Georgina.
Georgina's in the sunken place. Oh, yeah, maybe Georgina is
who
Grandma.
Who knows whose name is
I have no idea.
So Grandma and Georgina are sharing a body.
Yep.
Rose comes in and says, like, hey, you gotta say something to Chris because he knows you've been unplugging his phone.
Mm-hmm.
And so she just goes in her grandmotherly wording and tells him that she accidentally touched it, but rather than, like, be a big douche, she decided not to plug it back in. And something in the way that Chris talks to her...
He says,
gets through to the woman who's in the sunken place, and she is able to shine through Georgina's eyes and nothing else.
Yeah, well, he taps into an emotion that only the real Georgina can understand. Like, Grandma has no context for it. Grandma doesn't get it. Like, when he says, I don't want to snitch you out, I don't want to rat on you.
And she's like, tattletale.
Yeah, she has to think and figure out what he means. Like, she doesn't get it. And then he tells her that, like, you know, I just feel really uncomfortable and there's a lot of white people around. Grandma doesn't get that. But it does strike a nerve with the person that's in the fucking sunken place right now. And she's able to, like, rise up into the surface a little bit. It's the only time that that happens without the flash of a camera. And it's just because in, like, the power dynamic that's happening inside her mind, like, real Georgina wins in that moment. And just... it's like watching a drunk person hold on to a single word while they're passing out, but like in reverse, like you see her come into focus and then you watch like another person squash down that other, like
on somebody's face.
How does she fucking do that with just her eyes? Like, sure. Okay, cool. Like a single teardrop is insane. And like you can train forever
and
to do that.
She's smiling.
How do you become two different people in the span of 2 seconds and convey every fucking emotion possible?
I have no idea.
It's insane.
It is
crazy.
Every time I watch it, I just like, if I could like pull my chair up closer to the screen to watch that scene, it is fucking phenomenal snowman.
Yeah. if I made mixtapes that were just scenes from movies, that would bookend the whole mixtape. It'd be the first and the last, and maybe you'd know the intermission came because I played it 3 times in a row halfway through.
The acting in this movie, though, is fucking crazy.
It's
because
insane.
So the next scene that I want to talk, my next tentpole scene, is when Mom is first hypnotizing Chris, and we, the audience, learn she's hypnotizing him through the scene.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't necessarily catch on to the spoon right away.
No,
it's
not
in
at
the
all.
Background. But you can see on Chris's face that he's fighting something.
Yeah.
And his facial expressions are so fucking on point. He nails like every single like twitch and tweak of his face when he's sinking into this story that he does not want to tell. And he's looking at her like, how are you getting me to
this? I don't even know if, well, yeah, that's, it's not even like a, how are you getting me to do this? It's
I don't want to.
She's not in his head yet, but he's allowing her to do it because it's more polite than getting up and walking away. And that's how he's kind of been trained to live his life. It's like, that's what's so complex about that scene. And I think that's fucking genius. Because, yeah, he knows he should leave. He knows he should run out of that room. But it just wouldn't be right. And it's not his place to do that, is maybe what I'm trying to get at. Like, that's the, he's trying to be a guest. Emotion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But he's already said no to this anti-smoking hypnosis thing. And she's picking at something that he's very sensitive about. And for some reason, like, it's coming out of him slowly. Like, she's like, find the rain, find that rain. And like, I'm sure it's happening in Chris's head. We hear the rain coming in.
It's so genius.
See him, like, struggle to tell her that it's there. So, like, we listen to the rain, like, a little bit longer than necessary because she's like, tell me when you find the rain. Mm-hmm. And then he's found it, but it's like he's fighting the next step of, like, allowing her to know that she's hypnotized him.
Mm-hmm.
It's also
not a memory he definitely goes to very often, I'm sure.
No.
Yeah, and for him to, for the sunken place for it to be him staring at a television screen, and, like, that's where he's locked into where he was as a fucking child, like, so much of this movie is just fucking amazing. I can't, you know, I find the episodes where movies we like a lot, I swear a lot. I don't have the adjectives to describe how I feel, but I like it, and I know it in my heart, and fuck words.
Yeah, and then, like, so standout acting, Daniel Kaluuya, and who's the actress? What's the name of the actress that plays Georgina? Oh, I knew it.
Betty Gabriel.
Phenomenal. Wonderful. But we also have to give credit to Rose. When she does her flip from the first half of the movie to, like, her Armitage state,
yeah,
she, like, her hair goes back, her bangs get gelled back. She gets this almost, like, anemic look to her.
Mm.
She's very, like, almost like army precision.
Yeah.
She is wonderful at the end. She adds, like, an extra level of spook at the end that I just fucking am all for. And Dad, he's amazing in everything.
I mean, everybody else is, like, incredibly suspicious the whole movie. Mom and Dad, brother, especially the brother. And definitely everybody at that party. Holy shit. One thing that I noticed this time that I'd never noticed before was that when everybody was arriving for the party at the exact same time.
In, like, a convoy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Walter, the groundskeeper, and Georgina, the housekeeper, were the ones outside greeting everybody.
And they were embracing
everybody.
Yeah.
They were hugging, like, oh, welcome to the colloquia, or whatever the thing is.
But that's something that you don't necessarily see on your first viewing, because, like, yeah, it would make sense that Walter's opening the door for everyone at their car, because he's technically the groundskeeper. He's hired help. But the fact that they're embracing him is a little bit much.
It's a little much.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Because it's Grandpa.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that video that Grandpa makes.
I love it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you love it, but it's fucking crazy.
Oh, no, it is crazy.
It's the Coagula? What is it?
I don't remember what the group's name
Coagula.
Is. Coagula.
Coagula. Something like that. To come back to our jiu-jitsu versus UFC conversation at the beginning, like, Chris pulls out all the fucking stops, outsmarts everybody, thinks three steps ahead, and murders the whole goddamn family.
Yeah, so he does that scratchy thing every time the spoon comes on the TV, because it's hypnotizing him, it's putting him out. He frees up some cotton, which he then puts in his ears.
Yeah, he's able to sort of skip the last hypnotization.
Mm-hmm, and he fakes it. And that's how he's able to free himself, knock out the brother, kill the dad by impaling him with some deer horns, which
fucking
love it. Great.
That is the thing about this movie. When he goes berserk on the whole family, it is so earned and it's so good. I don't even think he tries to kill everybody, right? Like, he would rather just
like, they're everybody on the way for him to get to the door.
Yeah.
Is
exactly. Because he doesn't march around the house looking for Rose. She finds him.
Yeah.
He could care less.
Because he just wants to get out.
He wants to get out, yeah.
Yeah, and when he stumbles upon Mom, and it's like a fight for the teacup, and she stabs him with her, like, letter opener, and it's just like, they're so...
Oh, yeah.
Ugh.
Also, there's just a quick little beat after he smashed the teacup where he's just like, that's it. It's done. Like, you have lost now. And she stabs him through the hand, and it hurts and all, but it's fine, because he's just, like, a half a step away from killing her.
Well,
it's
and
no
he's
big
still
deal.
In his body. Like, it's just, like, this scene
that
could
is
have
so
played
true.
Out so differently. Like, it's almost like he appreciates this pain, because this is all she has to hurt him.
Yeah. What the fuck is a little pain if you can't take all of me? Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's real good. But, like, to keep coming back to my jiu-jitsu well... he's fighting with Caleb Landry Jones for the door.
And every, oh, it's the best.
Every time he goes for the door, he kicks the door, he pushes him back, and he's got an even stronger grip on Chris now. But Chris, thinking three steps ahead, goes through the door, knowing he's going to put his foot up, stabs him in the leg, gives him the leverage to kick him off and just stomp his goddamn head in. Which I think I talked about this in the Drive Home from the Drive-In. One of my favorite ways to kill a villain. I don't. It's always good because it goes on. It goes on too long. And like at some point you go, ugh, but it fuck that guy. He deserves it.
It's a great moment. And the end is where I kind of get a little like, meh.
Really?
No. So
okay.
I think the end is great.
Yeah.
So this is where my nitpicking comes in.
Okay. Let's hear
when
it.
Rose figures out that Chris is getting away, obviously, because there's car sounds, there's screaming, all kinds of stuff happening downstairs. She says, like, get him, Grandpa.
You don't... Well, when you say it like that, sure. But it's just playing to the back of the house. They're just
I know. Because, like, you know, first time I watched this, I don't know why I clued in that that was Grandma and Grandpa until that moment.
Okay.
Like, I think... Had I have thought about it or had we have left the theater, we would have been able to talk about it. And I would like, oh, fuck, that is Grandpa. How did I not get that? But yeah. And then she's just like, Grandma. like she's literally still alive in those scenes to just like make sure you all know that that's Grandma and Grandpa. Yeah, and also to smile with fucking blood in her teeth.
It looks so good. It looks so good. Oh, it's such a great scene too, right? Because like Chris is finally like getting his hands around her throat, and then the cops come. I remember being in the theater and hearing like a wave of people going, no, like we all had like this, like, I think
why they changed the ending, because it was just too much of a, like, a downer.
Oh yeah. 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 If, I mean, I'm sure you know, but if you're unfamiliar, the original ending.
And they filmed it. You can watch it on YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or on the DVD or the Blu-ray if you have it.
Yeah,
I'm
it's
sure
on there.
You do.
There's commentary with that alternate ending from Jordan Peele. So like, and that, I mean, how often does that happen where they literally explain why they changed it? And it's a much darker, maybe more realistic ending where the cops show up. They find a black guy standing over dead, like standing at the top of a mountain of dead white people, and he gets arrested
and
goes to jail.
It's also kind of a wonderful homage, the ending, the original ending to Night of the Living Dead, which is arguably, without necessarily being one of the greatest, like, rise of black horror films in cinema, but is it's perfect for this modern commentary on racism to kind of mirror Night of the Living Dead.
It was just too much of a downer at the time.
I think,
right?
It was just like, it's just too dark
because
he works so hard and he so earns it.
Yeah,
and we love him too much.
It fits the story though, because like he is worried, he's fighting being kept in a prison cell of his own psyche, and when he finally escapes, he's just greeted with another prison cell. Like, he just walks from one box that he's allowed to play in to another. Like, you could argue that the world he lives in before he meets the Armitages is like that. It's the world we live in. It's got a lot of constraints. It's got a lot of walls built up around him. And it's just, he shifts from one to another, and they just get, like, it's hard to say which one's worse, you know? But, I like this ending a lot. I would not have loved that ending. I would have appreciated the craft of it.
The only thing, though, isn't there a guy in the basement who's got his brain open?
Yeah, no, totally. There is a way for him to...
Oh, maybe the house... Does the house burn down?
The house is on fire at that point. Yeah. So you're right. In that scenario, it's probably... Because there is a conversation between him and his buddy, like, at the prison. And I'm sure at that point they say, like, oh, the house burned down. There's no evidence. Oh,
yeah,
you
yeah.
know, whatever. We spent this entire chunk... And we didn't even mention his friend, who is the heart of this movie. And
he's
just like absolute comedic gold.
No, he's amazing. And when he goes to the police, like there's some really great jokes and some levity, which this film needs, because otherwise it is like The Invitation. It is constant foreboding something that you can't put your finger on, and you can't like... Georgina, we didn't even talk about the moments where like the door swings open and Georgina's just like,
oh,
giving
just standing there with
a crazy
fucking cake.
Eyes. Because I think this neurosurgery that the neurosurgery / hypnosis that the Armitages are doing, it is not perfected. But I think because bodies get old and decay and die, they've kind of jumped into like, no, we're fine. Everything's good, because the society is quite old. Like Grandma and Grandpa have already hit death point, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So they've swapped them over. But there's a lot of upkeep, almost like these computers need to keep being updated, because when... the guy goes berserk at the party. He needs to go in mom's office to get, like, re-hypnotized kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't think they're necessarily ready for practical trials because we see Georgina and Walter do a lot of really weird things. Like, Walter running at night isn't something I've necessarily put my finger on completely. Does he have to maintain control, like, at all hours of the night?
No.
And that's why he runs? Because there's no need for an old man to be up that late.
There's definitely...
6 in the morning, I get.
Well, he's invigorated with the youth of this body. And I think also he's just... Because Grandma's also up just, like, staring at her own reflection. Grandpa lost to Jesse Owens. Like, that is the big backstory we hear, right? Mm-hmm. He didn't make it to the Olympics because he wasn't as fast as Jesse Owens. So now he's got himself a body that can run super fast. And there's nothing that can stop him. And he spends his nights loving it. Because he's a horrible person.
It also might be, too, because Chris is there. So they're, like, when Chris is not there, they're not playing the pretense of groundskeeper and housemaid. Like, this
probably
is
not
all for show.
I don't know. I don't think so. I think they are on vacation and seeing how the other half lives. I think they have a sick enjoyment out of that. And it also kind of is a feedback loop on their own bigotry racism. Because they think that black people want to be subservient to white people. And I think they get a kick out of doing it.
So you think that they're, when Chris isn't there, they're actually, like, Walter's actually chopping wood out back and
I do think
opening
that.
Doors.
Oh,
and,
yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
I think they're playing the role.
Also, maybe, too, like, they need to sort of do that to keep up the appearances because, one, a bunch of black people are going missing. These people that are post-op are going to have to be at least some way in out of the public eye and in hiding.
Yeah.
So, like, apart from, like, the order or whatever, I'm sure they don't do a public appearances because they have
no.
the face of a missing person.
Yeah. And not, like, I'm sorry, not to keep bringing this back to, like, a wrestling versus jiu-jitsu.
But back to jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. No, seriously, because it's like a... It's like a meditation on an easy life. Oh, I don't have to worry about using my brain anymore because I'm black. I'll just use my hands. Like, I think.
Ew, you're so right.
Yeah, you see what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, also, when we're talking about Andre Hayworth, I think was his name,
mm-hmm.
the kid that's gone missing, the dude from Atlanta and Knives Out, he talks about how he's found, I can't remember the exact phrasing, but basically just like, I find joy and reward in the house chores now. And, like, yeah, sure, part of that is because he kind of needs to stay home and keep a low profile.
Mm-hmm.
But I think also life is so easy now that I only have to worry about the simple things that this race is concerned with.
Another one of the nitpicks that I have about this movie, and maybe it's just because, like, for time, we could not get to all of this. We couldn't explain everything. But once it is revealed that Rose is involved with all of her family's nonsense, mm-hmm. and Chris discovers all of those photos of the previous people, where are they?
Sorry, ask me that question one more time.
The people that Rose has previously, like, black catfished.
Sorry, yes.
Should they not have been at the party also, like Andre was? Or did they keep those ones home so as not to tip off Chris too much? Like, I don't...
I think that Andre is the newest
mm-hmm.
Person, and... One, they say that, like, oh, they thought, you know, you'd be more comfortable with me around. So I think, one, they have him there because they need a token black guy to make this guy feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And also because the last time everybody in that group saw that guy, he was an old white dude.
So he's just like, this is like his coming out.
Yes.
Yeah
exactly. This is his coming out ball.
Okay. Oh, when he does that dance?
Where
to,
he
like,
turns
show
around
off the body.
Like, check it out.
Oh, man.
Oh, that is,
I remember watching that. Like, the first time I watched the movie and watching that scene and being like, what the fuck?
Yeah. I think one of my absolute, my new favorite moment of the movie, because, like, every time you see a movie like this, there is a new favorite moment. Obviously, the no's from Georgina was everybody's favorite the first three times. But
first eight times.
This time around, it's the moment where, right before that, actually, where he goes upstairs to check on his phone and the entire party, the entire house stops talking. And they just follow his footsteps up the stairs, and down the hallway. Because there is no fucking party. There is no party. Everybody is just pretending.
It's a buffet.
Yeah, it's a bunch of extras staring at a guy. Yeah, it's nuts. It's nuts.
Because it's for an auction. They're basically interviewing what's for sale.
This movie's so
squeezing
good.
His biceps.
They do everything but check his fucking teeth, right?
Oh, man.
This movie's great. I love this movie.
And that's why Rose exists. That's why I think her version of catfishing exists. Because he gets to walk around this party free for them to interview him almost.
Yes.
Like, I think this is how they get the most money out of these bodies because
they get
to ask him, like, oh, are you into golf? Have you played golf? Like, you know what I mean? And Rose gets to be there and be like, oh, these people are being real racist.
Yeah.
Like, keep him calm almost. But maybe this is leading to another nitpick. The brother has this brute force version of,
yeah.
Like, we notice how Andre is captured because he's captured in the cold open. Where he's literally like beaten and put in a trunk. And then in the outro, when Chris gets in his car, there's like a metal Viking helmet.
Yeah, which it's what he was wearing. Yeah, because it's the brother's car that he's escaping in.
Yeah, but I cannot picture how all of these steps, like the first hypnosis and then the sunken place and then the auction, how any of that would go down in the brother's version of obtaining this person.
I think at that point they probably come to the house and there's a guy chained to a chair.
And there's just a photo, like, or something like that. Like, and they don't know him at all.
Basketball player?
Yeah. Like, maybe in that case, like, maybe he just does ones that are personally purchased. Like, so somebody's I want a basketball player. It has to be a basketball player. And yeah. Rose, like, can't get a basketball player.
Or something.
They just kidnap one.
Well, I think also to have the two of them do it. I would have assumed that the boyfriend would have gotten any female patience, whatever you want to say, that they need female inventory.
He's too crazy to do the, like,
no, he's
the
too
slow catfish.
He could not
catfish anyone. His crazy would come out after like one drink.
No, they're just like, you got a red mustache. I'm not going anywhere with you.
Why do you keep this fucking helmet in your car?
That's my motorcycle helmet.
And a bottle of chloroform. And you're just like, what do you have planned?
You don't like to party?
Maybe, like, in my perfect world, I maybe would have cut out that the brother does any of the recruiting, the kidnapping.
Kidnapping, yeah.
Because the sisters work so well with the guys that the Armitages have set up, or the guys that we see.
Yeah.
And I cannot see the brother, like, how Andre's change went down. But those are my only nitpicks. I think my only nitpick is that the movie's not longer and I don't get to see it happen twice.
Right. I'm trying to think, like, I'm trying to get nitpicky. And I'm trying to think about stuff in the movie that I don't like. And I'm coming up very short. I think if I had watched it maybe a second time this week, I would. Because, like, I don't know that I would have complained about the flashback sequences and the invitation if I didn't have to watch them a second time.
I do have something that I don't like.
Pretty fucking great.
And I know that I said this in the drive home that we initially did.
Sure.
The trailers for this movie have some really awesome nightmarish visuals of deer skulls.
Yeah.
And these, like, blue black deers coming to life. And I'm not sure if they're in the sunken place or if it's during a nightmare sequence or something.
I have a feeling it's gotta be
the
sunken place, right?
But they filmed something with nightmare deers and we never got it. It was in the trailer.
It's in the deleted scenes. You can see it.
Is it?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah, but I think what they wanted to do was keep the horror to the real world.
They do a very great job of capturing some really nightmarish visuals while still keeping them grounded. Like, all of that TV basement stuff. It's literally in a rec room with a foosball table in the background. And you're like, this is terrifying. And they have, like, old ping pong. Like,
evil.
It's a fucking wonderful movie.
So, given the title of this episode,
oh dear,
we can't leave it without at least discussing that. This movie does a better job of the I hit a small animal on the way to something than The Invitation does. It's a trope you see in a lot of movies.
Well, because
I think
it's just the initial sense of foreboding. There's something. It's the going to the gas station, the teenagers going to the gas station on the way to the cabin where the murderer is.
Sure.
And the gas station attendant warns them that it's cursed, haunted, they're all gonna die.
Yeah.
There's no service past here.
Yep.
That's what the deer does. The deer is that foreboding gas station. Something is not going well for you today.
They do a much better job of it in Get Out than in most movies, but definitely than The Invitation. Like, in The Invitation, I think sometimes, honestly, specifically the we hit an animal, it's not dead, we gotta finish it,
mm-hmm.
I think is just to show, one, foreboding, death is around the corner, it could happen at any time, cut through your nice, perfect, happy day, but that our final girl or one of our characters, whoever, is capable of killing when they have to.
When they're backed up to a corner.
Exactly. But never for the wrong reasons. Only to make life better, I guess. Like, I'm only
so
gonna...
So we should trust their judgment almost in...
Yeah.
In, like, when things get, penultimate, this is your hero.
Yeah. But in Get Out, though, it is completely different. It takes that trope, like it does a lot of other horror tropes, and really uses it in an interesting, unique way that super-duper fits Chris's character. In this, more than anything, it's what grounds him to this entire situation. It's his mother's death, because his mother was hit by a car and left on the side of the road, and nobody came to do anything about it. And, like, that's the memory that he's locking into in that moment when he stares at the deer, taking its final breath. Like, it's still a little alive when he gets
there. It's like he's
there
to witness it?
Yes. And yeah, and so, like, that is what brings him back. That's what gives them the ability to get to the sunken place. It's also, it shows his humanity also, too, at the end when he hits Georgina with the car and he can't leave her because she just looks like a woman in a house coat on the side of the road. And he knows there's a real person in there. So he has to pick her up and put her in the car. And, you know, that's what crashes the car and shit. It's just, it's all worked so goddamn well. And it just comes down to Chris as a character.
Yeah.
That is the strongest thing this movie has, like, above every other major strength, is how well written of a character he is. The entire movie comes from him, and it's not just this interesting person who reacts to a wild situation. It all happens because, and the way it happens is because of how Chris is and his life and everything. I'm sorry, I'm rambling.
No, that's really good. I also wanted to say, like, a funny side note too about the deer scene is that instead of
back to that trailer moment.
But no, the deer scene where they hit the deer.
Oh yeah, sure.
Instead of calling animal control, they call the police, which is just like a city kid mistake. Because
does he call the police?
I think Rose does.
There's no way she calls the police. There's no way she calls the police.
But that's how the scene starts. She's like, you know, next time you can just call animal control for this.
I'm sorry, I was too busy just thinking about the deer when that happened. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, so...
That's crazy, because, like, her number one goal there is don't let this cop know this guy's name. She can't let that cop see his ID.
Oh my god!
Because then the entire weekend is ruined. That's why she's has this veil of just like, oh, is it because he's black and you need to see his ID? Come on, sir, stop being so racist. And, like, she brings it up again too later in the movie. I love the scene when she brings it up and how weird her parents are, because he's like, like, this is all, like, so mind blowing to her that people could act this way, and he's just like, yeah, this is how the world is. But she can't. The jig is up if that cop knows his name.
Oh fuck! I've never even thought of that.
You're
blowing my mind with all this deer scene stuff. I never thought of any of this stuff.
I will do you the courtesy of saying that we have had these conversations before, and that half of these conversations was you. So, I mean, there's more I could talk about. I like this movie a lot. We're going on a little long. It's my fault.
No, I'm digging the deer stuff. I'm digging it. I already want to rewatch the movie now. Because I'm like, oh my god, I didn't... Now I want to watch it just to watch Rose more, because she does a lot of weird things that I don't know if they... Because you're just like, wow, she's going full into this, like, I love you, Chris character. But how much of it is for her protecting what's happening that weekend?
Also, she can't get over how good she is at it. Because she's definitely the person who was looking at those photos and shit. Like, there's no reason for that little cupboard to be open all the time. And for Chris to keep going in. Like, he only goes because it looks like somebody's been in there. I can't imagine Walter or Georgina or her parents.
Well, and as soon as the jig is up, she's put the pictures up
she
on the wall.
She puts them back up on the wall!
Yeah.
Oh, that's,
like,
crazy.
I need to just watch this movie. Just watch Rose. Like, watch nothing else. Don't get sucked into Georgina's awesomeness. Don't get sucked into Chris. Like, just watch Rose.
Yeah. I mean, if you haven't read In Fangoria, and this is the one thing I want to leave on, the inspiration that Betty Gabriel took for Georgina as a character, especially in that moment, was the Bride of Frankenstein.
How perfect is that?
It's insane. because it's just like you're in a body that's yours, but you don't understand it, and it's so foreign to you, and it's a horror, and I would love to do a double feature of The Bride of Frankenstein with Georgina.
5 minutes of Get Out.
5 minutes, yeah. Georgina spinoff, fuck. Okay, let's just...
So good.
Let's just get to ratings.
Okay.
Also, this time around, I've got to pay attention to the score more. Fuck, that's a good score.
It is a good score.
Now I totally understand why everybody bought it. When it came out, I was like, is it that good? I don't remember it being. I'm sure it's good. Fuck, it's good. I would buy it now if I found it on sale.
So sometimes you need to watch a movie enough times that you can sever yourself from different aspects of it so you can pay attention to individual moments. Like, I'm going to watch it just for Rose because I don't know if I necessarily paid attention to like her character arc.
Yeah.
And it's a fucked up character arc. Because there's so many things that grab your attention first. Because it's a multifaceted film.
So, Kim, how would you rate this multifaceted film?
So, I'm going to say it's Phenomenal Snowman again.
Yep.
Because I'm cementing that as a word that we've invented this episode.
Okay, yeah.
Fuck. I'm going to give it a 3.5 out of 4 also.
Mm-hmm.
Same as Invitation. Because it's awesome. It's dope. I need to know... what the brother's thing looks like. I just need to know.
It's probably a lot like something at a hostel where it's just somebody chained to a chair and they send them some photos.
I can't see these old people paying good money for somebody that's like, because they have to keep them protected. Like, they can't injure them.
Sure.
Especially the fact that, like, Chris gets to talk to the guy that bought his body and he gets to watch this, like, peaceful video.
Okay,
like, okay. There's this weird level of, like, useless indoctrination.
Here's what I would suggest then. They had the party for reasons outside their control, couldn't go through the surgery that weekend. Either he didn't take to the hypnotism because they weren't able to corner him. Turns out he's got people are expecting him somewhere the very next day. Like, any number of things.
Mm-hmm.
And because it couldn't happen right there, right then, that's when the brother gets brought in to make him disappear at a convenient time.
I believe that. Bought it.
Yeah.
I see. I need to see. So that's unfortunately, that's just a different movie.
Oh, yeah. Completely different movie.
Yeah.
My rating, though, I'm going to go 4 out of 4 on this one. Abominable Snowman. I can't think of anything I don't like about it. And it also just kind of like surprises me how perfect it is every time I watch it.
Yeah.
I underestimate this movie, even having seen it before.
That's very true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing to say out loud.
There's very few movies that I can rewatch so many times, like, after they've come out. Like, this and, I would say, Hereditary are going to be, like, my most rewatched movies of the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. And if you had told me that, having seen the trailer, like, a dozen times, like, oh, this is a movie that you're going to be able to watch over and over and over again, and it's going to be better every time, I would not have believed you.
But yeah, let us know what you think of Get Out and The Invitation. I'm sure you've talked about Get Out a lot before. I know we're kind of bringing up a new film with old eyes. But chat about us the things that you discovered on like second and third watch. The stuff that you didn't necessarily see in the theater. And characters that really stood out for you. Because I want to know what else. I'm sure there's more Easter eggs and things that we haven't picked up on. And The Invitation, let us know what you think about that movie. And if you can really get into the slow tension of it. Because it's quite the investment when you do.
Yeah, I love those movies.
You can tweet at us at NOFS Podcast. You can also join us in our Facebook group. That is facebook.com/groups/horrorfiendsofNOFS.
We are controlling transmission.
Trouble with 11.
This week's episode of Nightmare on Film Street is brought to you by Baphomet & Co. Small batch soap inspired by horror and the macabre. This week's pick is the Sunken Place Bar, a deceptively delicate soap that is light and warm with a bottomless calming, inspired by Jordan Peele's Get Out. Memories of a hypnotizing gaze, a warm smile with a hint of foreboding, and an endlessly twirling spoon. Get 10% off your order with the code NIGHTMARE at BaphometAndCo.com. That's 10% off with the coupon code NIGHTMARE at Baphomet & Co. Made by hands, sometimes severed.
We're going to stick around for a few more minutes and play a game that I've put together called Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. I'm going to quiz Kim on her knowledge of deadly dinner parties.
Ooh. And in celebrating Home is Where the Horror Is Month at Nightmare on Film Street and American Thanksgiving, you can get even more dinner party horrors, home-based horrors, and crazy shit like this episode over at nofspodcast.com.
But until next time, I'm John.
Kim.
Stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive. Just long enough to tell the tale of the nightmare on Film Street. Ow! Help us grow the horde. Leave a review on iTunes or wherever you subscribe. Continue this week's conversation on Twitter by following at NOFS Podcast. And as always, more terror can be found lurking on our website, www.NightmareOnFilmStreetPodcast.com. Until next week, stay creepy, fiends.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.